Hello and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy. I'm joined by the regular rugby crew, that is Sam and Westy. We are back with some URC action after a few weeks off due to the Six Nations. All four provinces in action, and we will talk about each game and give our opinions. And always, as always, Sam, how are you? How are your weekend?
I had a long weekend because February half term, so was back at a wedding party in Dublin on Thursday night. Went to the zoo Thursday, it was pretty cool. Then went to go see Peppa in the cinema on Friday, so everybody's jealous of that. And then nothing much then after that, just watched some rugby, went to Rugby Tots the weekend, was in Galway City, and nothing was open because there was a power outage for a while. And then had our own match yesterday, made my triumphant return after 3 months out against the same team, the only other team I played this season, and did not impress. And I didn't do myself any favours in my fight.
Did you guys win?
We drew. They missed a kick to win it at the end, so we drew, which actually works out for us because I think they need to win by 35 points and a bonus point to jump us at the top of the table. So it's likely that we'll go into the final straight. If not, we'll the semi-final. So the result was good for us. My cameo, my first game back in 3 months after about three trainings, was not anything to write home about.
Where were you playing?
I came on the wing, and then they moved me to centre after I missed an open field tackle. So all the criticism that I'm going to give now on people missing things, just take that all with a pinch of salt. Just, I'm no better.
Yeah, I think it's always good to, you know, remind ourselves that we're so bad at stuff compared to professional athletes. Yeah, we'll sit here and criticise them for the next hour. So that's always fun. Westy, how was your performance?
Not a lot better, to be honest. Pretty good in defensive line out, but slow off the line for tackles. Yeah, I think most of us are a bit somber about it yesterday. We kind of feel like we were 7 points up with about 5 minutes to go and then almost conceded 10 points in the last 2 minutes to lose it. But yeah, as Sam said, like it brings you back down to earth. You realize why you get so annoyed, you know, because, you know, when we can't do bad, it's your one escape from how shit we actually are at rugby. But yeah, I've not had a great weekend. Kind of a nice quiet weekend here in the house. I was out with my partner and her parents for dinner on Saturday, so that was kind of nice as well. And then we all had breakfast together Saturday or Sunday morning, which was really nice. So yeah.
We did. It was pleasant. And the only table really that could fit, seven people we got, which is always handy. Yeah, it was quite a weekend myself too. I was on call for work, so nothing too weird or wonderful. A beautiful day today. Sun was out. It was that bright, like after six. God gives you such hope for the next few weeks and months, which is great. And yeah, finish. I'll be on call till Wednesday, and then after that, I'm free. Free bird. Do a sick guitar solo, like that song, which is a pretty impressive guitar solo. Right, we'll get stuck into the rugby. Unfortunately, we have to start with Connacht. Connacht are away to Cardiff. Come out victors, 16 points to 12. A rare away win in Wales. We should be sitting here quite excited, I think. Well, I'll speak for myself, quite excited and quite happy, but context is important. And that we'll get stuck into that now in a second. But I suppose, again, removing yourself a little bit, taking a bit of a view from 1,000 miles up. Great 4 points to get, a very needed 4 points, especially with the upcoming games now that we have, and our position at the table, and that's the most important part. With that being said, really bad performance from Connacht. First game in what, 3 weeks? Was it 3 weeks off? And it looked it. It looked like it. I think we'll get into reasons maybe why they looked so poor. But just on the whole, intensity didn't really seem there from the get go. Decision making was quite poor. I thought game management was quite poor, especially considering Cardiff were with 13 men for 10 minutes of the game and 14 for what, 65 minutes or so. And it never once looked like Connacht had the man advantage at any part of the game. And it just seemed like one of those performances where we haven't seen, I don't know, again, I'm trying to think back to last season. I think that's probably one of the worst performances in at least two or three seasons, I would say. Maybe we had a really bad one last year that I can't seem to remember, but
we've lost games with bad performances like that. This one stands out more and will stand out more because we didn't lose, which is a big difference in the we have had very poor games in the last few years, as poor as that, but we've come out 40 points down to it. You know, that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, maybe that was it. We couldn't just get a foothold into the game, and then Cardiff couldn't really separate themselves because of the man down, probably, and they were starting to tire. Although they did go 12 points up, but then the try was ruled against them for it was a clear kind of forward pass thing. But if that try had counted, who knows what would have happened? But you know, we have to be critical here because it wasn't good. I think, you know, we were chatting the WhatsApp, and I think Sam, you were kind of patiently waiting for eventually them to kick into gear. I think you made some good points of it, like, you know, you have to kind of tire the team down to make that man advantage count, but it just didn't really seem to kick in, especially at halftime. You know, second half, I wanted them to come out, you know, all guns blazing. And again, Cardiff sort of started second half on the front foot. Really, just really disappointing in terms of, again, the result. You know, 4 points, we're putting that to the side, brilliant. You know, talk about a great stepping stone for the rest of the season. That goes without saying. But like Westy, watching it, you know, again, I feel like I'm quite on the negative side sometimes. I feel like Sam's kind of the opposite. He's quite positive. I kind of place you in the middle. You're kind of our barometer of how good or bad things are. So give me your breakdown of that game.
I think you've raised some really good points so far. I mean, at the end of the day, look, it's a win away in Cardiff. I think I read today it was our fourth ever win in Cardiff. So that has to be put in context, fourth or fifth, I'm not sure. I think the conditions were awful. By all accounts, they're far worse than they looked on telly. Cardiff had lost a really significant figure in Barry John during the week, and there was a big tribute to him. It was also their kind of engagement weekend. They were all wearing their club socks, sellout stadium. And even I think Pete Wilkins said after the game that it was one of the best environments he's ever experienced at a Cardiff game. So I think all of that plays into kind of how well they played, or at least how much energy they played with, because I'm not going to sit here and pretend they played great either. I think what you said about that try being chalked off for the forward pass is a real momentum point, because if we concede that try, I find it hard to see us working our way back into the game, just in the way the game was going at that point. I'll just come back to that. 4 points is 4 points. I think because of the nature of Welsh rugby at the minute, and especially the fact they're missing so many players due to the Six Nations, I think we were expected to go and put a high score on them. We kind of got brought back down to earth there a little bit. We got reminded that we're actually one of the lowest scoring teams in the URC, although we're still, you know, we're still in quite a competitive position. I think that you said it as well, and I totally agree. I think in a situation like that, getting the red card, it's such bad conditions, it's so wet, the ball's so slippy, that one-man advantage on attack doesn't really help you. You're not able to spread the ball as wide and find the overlap as much as you would in kind of drier conditions. So the man advantage only really benefits you on defence and makes it easier for you to contain them. And even we saw us having trouble with that when they were down to 13 men. So there's a lot of context to the game. I think it's important to put the game in context. As you said, it's also a one-off game in the middle of it's essentially a preseason game, because you haven't played in 3 weeks and you're not going to play now for another 2 weeks again. So contextually, there's a lot to analyse. I just think that the real worry for most people watching it was I thought we looked wrecked. I thought we looked so fatigued. I thought we didn't really seem to have the momentum, the energy, the drive to get on top in the game. And I think our bench saved us. I think we finished out the game strong. They were exhausted from having to defend the extra man and perhaps didn't have a stronger bench to come on in the end. But I will put it in context again. Cardiff have a lot of losing bonus points all season. Most of their games have been quite close. They're the best performing of the Welsh regions. Maybe we were a little bit too confident going into it. I, for one, am never confident going into Cardiff games. But look, it was an ugly win. And again, I'm just repeating stuff we've said at breakfast yesterday. Two seasons ago, we don't win that game. We lose that game. And I think winning ugly is important. When you get into a habit of winning, you can then build on how you're winning and winning better. And I think, look, we got the win. We'll take it. I'd happily forget that game. I wrap it.
Yeah, Sam, we all kind of said afterwards they looked exhausted, and then Pete Wilkins kind of came out and said maybe one of the reasons why they're so exhausted. Do you want to tell us what that was?
Well, he mentioned in it that it was kind of they've got, had to go back into a second preseason midway through the season because you've gone in for I think it's 13 weeks in a row, then a week off, and then another week or two, and then a bit of time off. So the mental fatigue just kicks in at that point. You really go to the well time and time again after about week six, but to go to week 13 because of the World Cup, that's a huge toll on you mentally and physically. It stops you being able to train properly. You know, you can't do any actual new stuff. It's all just managing your weeks from that point on. You come in, you reassess, you do a bit of weights, you do a little bit of structure, but nothing overly intense. So they've gone into a preseason, and he put that down to maybe part of the reason that they were rusty. I think Westy bang on with a few of the significant factors outside of the game that really contributed to it. The rain, the wind, the event that was on there, and I think that they got galvanized by the red card. They looked it for the first 12 minutes. I know it's only 12 minutes, but we did look on top. We got a turnover 25 seconds in. We went down. We didn't quite capitalize, but our maul was moving. Probably should have moved it out. Decision making needs to be a little bit better, a little bit sharper. But I thought we looked okay for that 12 minutes. And then they got the red card and were galvanized. So I don't think that they looked fully fit, but I wouldn't be too worried about it because they have another 2 weeks off now. They have the Scarlets game, and I think that they will be building it quite like you see soccer teams doing in the winter break in the Premier League or in the German, they have a much more significant one. They do build back up into it, and you have to build up a match stamina. You can't just maintain your fitness throughout that 2 weeks off because mentally you have to be able to take a break. So Wilkins had referenced that. You look at it from the outside and you go, I think they would have just taken whatever. If you could give them 4 points from this and 4 points or five from Scarlets, four or five from the Lions, I think they'd take that. Just considering how haphazard this period of time is, you've got players away with the international team that aren't involved. You have players that are involved in the international team that can't play. You have some lads coming back from injury. You have a bit of travel. All of that all adds up. So I'm looking at it from the very much just the, okay, it was a poor performance, but they managed to get it done. They wouldn't have done it in the past. I think the fitness thing is because you see it all the time in actual preseason games, like the Sale game or the Edinburgh game, where one team is just significantly better position than another. But if you're managing a preseason, if you're managing a period of a down period, a fallow period, you're managing to build up to a certain level of fitness and stamina and match sharpness. This one might just have been in the middle of that, and they said they chanced their arm because it's Cardiff. They will have had players away, and they weren't doing too well in the league. So any number of reasons could be that. But I know Wilkins did mention that they were kind of in like a second mini preseason, and that can really take its toll on your body and your mind, just trying to get back into that sharpness of it.
Yeah, no, I think that definitely, at least it's a reason as to why they look so low energy. I don't know, like we kind of said this again yesterday, like a week off as a professional athlete, definitely needed. I think I said after a 13 week, I just didn't think that, again, fitness would drop off to the extent where you would need that again after a week off. I know probably the week off to going on holidays, they're probably having a few drinks and rightly so, rightly earned, but I don't know, like,
I don't think it's physically that their body isn't capable. I think it's that you have to retrain your mind to go to the well. You know, they've gone 13 weeks in a row. They've played through niggles. None of them, like professional rugby players, are never at 100%. But by the end of that 13-week period, you're playing on, you know, some players are probably playing on tape together 10%. They're doing it as much with their mind as they are their physical bodies. I don't think any of them would have an issue running now more so than they did 6 weeks ago. But I think it's the idea of getting up in your match, all of those things, you have to retrain your mind into that. And the 2 weeks off can be significant if you've really pushed it. Like within that 13 weeks, they've tripped to South Africa, done. They've had Interpros over Christmas. There's so much goes into it. And yeah, Cardiff have the same break. So you have to compare and contrast. But I it's a home game for Cardiff. There was a lot of good feelings around with it being a sellout. That's the only time I remember sellout with Connacht going to town in Cardiff. So there is outside factors. I don't think any of them are the reason why Connacht didn't play that well. I think there does need to be a reassessment in the analysing of it this week, and they need to look at what they did and how they did it. They need to use the elements a little bit more. They didn't kick it as much in the first half, and then they got much more purchase from kicks in the second half. Stuff like that needs to be done. But I do think that the 2 weeks off after 13 weeks in a row is pretty significant. I think that it does take its toll on your body because your body just goes into complete like shut down, relax mode. Like I know my mom, when she works away, she works for like 6-7 months in a row. And then when she gets home without fault, she'll be home for 2 days and her body will just be like a flu because her body's been fighting that off for so long. eventually, once it hits that rest period, it really just it shuts itself down. So I put it down to that a little bit. One point that Westy made actually in the car yesterday that I thought was really good was when you're playing against 14 men, it's a lot less of a like you should definitely be capitalizing on it and kind of did in the end take hold. But it's a lot less of a significant factor if you're playing as 14 men in those sort of elements because you can't fling it out wide. You can't run around them. You can't kind of beat them on the outside. You have to try and beat them up and they can just defend and they defended quite astutely. And that I think that if it was a sunnier day on that track, the 14 men shows a lot more than they did yesterday. I think they managed it quite well because they can use the fact that knock-ons were happening, the fact that passes were going to ground, the fact the wind and the rain was howling. They use that almost as another defender.
Yeah, I think one thing that always boggles my mind, I think sometimes it really puts to or it factors towards kind of sometimes Connacht's kind of weak mentality sometimes, is like we keep hearing about this, oh, away to Cardiff is always tough, away to Cardiff is always tough. Like, why is it tough? Like, why do Connacht have this in their head? Like, it's not like it's a long flight. It's they're a team that's not, I would say Connacht are a better team than Cardiff the last couple of years. I think that's fair. Conditions are something that we're very used to playing in. Cardiff weren't knocking the ball on at the rate we were. Their you know, ruck retention wasn't as awful as Connacht's were. Again, it's not like you're playing in way different heat like South Africa. You're playing in similar exact same conditions. Why is it that Connacht struggles so much away in the terms of playing away to Wales? Like, I don't get it. It's like, it's almost like if Connacht are thinking this, and I hope the players aren't, or I hope the coaching staff are not thinking this. I know fans do, but like that's not good to have that as a mentality going into a game. Or what I'm trying to say here is I don't know why Connacht struggles so much.
That's not just Connacht. That's sport in general. Like, sport has emotion and investment and DNA throughout it. Like, you can talk about bogey teams in soccer. You can talk about Ireland trying to get the New Zealand monkey off their back for 100 odd years. You can talk about Leinster playing La Rochelle. There's like that exists throughout sport. That's not just isolated Connacht. So you're having bogey teams, having hard aways, having places that are notoriously hard to go, not just for Connacht. Like Wilkins said, even he only got one win as an Edinburgh coach there. Like, so though that exists in sport, that's just not just isolated Connacht. We're just more in tune with it being a Connacht thing because we have this remembering, this overarching memory of Connacht failing in Cardiff for a whole number of reasons, sometimes being shafted by refs, sometimes being shafted by own decision making, sometimes just being beaten. But I don't think that's isolated Connacht. Like, as a Liverpool fan, there's places that I'm forever going, oh, Jesus, I can't, like, not going there. Or even Eagles against Washington, who are just a crap team, and the Eagles just always seem to slip up against them. It happens because that's sport. It's emotional-based, and sports, like, jerseys have memories and DNA, and it does, like, no matter how much you want to kind of say, oh, no, that's all just in your head, like, Munster in the Champions Cup are just a different animal. Liverpool in the Champions League are just a different animal. Those things do exist in sport because players are in tune to the emotion of the team that they play for.
Yeah, I know that exists, but I'm saying like a lot of these players playing wouldn't have played 2 or 3 years ago away to Cardiff. So what, like, why are they being affected by this? Why was the performance so bad for the likes of Jack Ainger, the likes of Niall Murray, Hurley Langton?
I thought Murray.
Like, why is it across?
I thought Murray played well.
Yeah, you know, but I'm not saying, but he was no one stood out. I don't think as having an exceptional game, but these players didn't play 3 years ago. Say maybe away in Cardiff, or don't have that baggage that as the likes of maybe a Jack Harty would have, or a Peter, or Dennis Buckley. I'm saying, but like, that's, like, why? Surely you just treat it as a, okay, this is a game. We are better. They're down 2 men at some stages here. They're down to one man for 65 minutes of the game, and it just couldn't get going. Like Westy, we see this occasionally from Connacht where it's, you know, handling errors. It's, and I know the conditions were poor, but who do we look to here? Where do you put the blame? Whose feet do you lay that at? Is this a coaching issue? Is it a player issue? Is it just a club issue? What are your thoughts on the errors?
I know I say this all the time, but I think it's a bit of both. Like, I think maybe there's definitely an error in your pre-analysis of the game and what you're going to do. Now, look, weather can change. I didn't know the weather's going to be that bad. Maybe they're predicting a better day. You know, we tried to run the ball quite a lot early on and we didn't get much purchase from it. It was only when we moved to a slightly more intelligent kicking game that we started to get purchase. You know, like, I think I'm not really a big fan of box kicking, but once we started dividing up those kicking responsibilities between our 10 and our 9, We started to see a little bit better progression and a little bit more pressure put on Cardiff. Sometimes we're our own worst enemies when we're trying to run out of our own 22. Now, that's what we do it all the time, but even when we get two or three phases together, the error came that we knocked on a ball. And I think that's down to individual error. You can't. You can coach a team with even if you have a perfect game plan, you can drop balls. Like it can just not be your day. And I think maybe that comes back to the sloppiness or the mental fatigue or the mental detachment, maybe that Sam was talking about earlier. I think, like again, I would go as far as say that they're fatigued, so maybe they were overrun during the week before the match because they were put through two hard weeks of pre-season. I remember 2 years ago we played Edinburgh in this fixture and they put 50 points on us. It's not a standalone thing for us to have a poor performance. And I want to point out as well, like, I think Cardiff beat Leinster in this fixture 2 years ago in Cardiff Arms Park. And this Cardiff team beat the Stormers in Cardiff Arms Park earlier. Now, again, look, that was with, sorry, I shouldn't say this Cardiff team because it's not the same starting team, but with their full tilt. Like I said before, a lot of their games are one score games. They have a lot of losing bonus points picked up. And yeah, I think, they were kind of galvanized. And I think our first mistake comes from, when we get that first penalty early on and we go for line, that doesn't work out. We kind of take a confidence knock there, and that becomes apparent the more pressure they put on us, we can push back and push back. So, yeah, I don't want to say it's not enough mental resilience or anything like that because I don't want to go back on things that we've said in other seasons that I don't think are problems. I think it's just a false start, to be honest. I wouldn't be banging on anybody's door about the performance. I don't think it's good enough, and I think everyone will accept that it's not good enough. Everyone on pitch will accept that they didn't play well enough. But they've got a week now to right that and to put down a marker against Scarlets. And by put down a marker, I don't mean put 50 points on them in the sports ground. I mean play confident, cohesive rugby and get a good result. If we get a 5-point win, fantastic. If we get a 4 points for win, great. I'm happy with that. We just need to keep, and that's the thing I'll harp back to about this performance. We got the win, by hook or by crook, we got it. I don't care that it wasn't pretty. If we keep winning games really for the next 2 or 3 years, then maybe I'll want to see what our game plan is and what our plans for progression are. But for a year that's so tight, I think it's just about getting the win. We were away, get the win. We did it.
Yeah, that's fair. On a few positive notes, Sam, we kind of mentioned Niall Murray had a great game. I thought he's mentioned that the bench come on, especially that front row. I think of McElroy, Dooley, and especially Sam Elo. We kind of seen him really, I suppose, his first proper a couple of highlight packages there, two or three big carries. We were very excited when he joined Connacht a couple of years ago from the under 20 from Leinster Academy. What do we think the ceiling is for Sam Elo? I know he's still obviously very young and still very much in his kind of early days as a professional, but the talent's there, the power is there. I think, does he have a high ceiling in your opinion?
I think he has, like, as a long time starter for Connacht as his potential ceiling. He looks every bit the player that you want. He still looks raw. He still, I know he wasn't in the team the first year. He was the probably a little bit cursed by the fact he signed a full contract for Connacht because we wanted to get him away from that Leinster Academy and he wanted the full contract. So people expected him to play more than he did, but they treated him very much like an academy prospect and they put a lot of emphasis in his future. Supposedly he struggled scrummaging wise, but that's been growing and you've seen this season he's a couple more cameos. So he looks like the type of player Connacht would like as well. He's a mobile and agile front row and he had a big impact on the game. So I'm very positive about his future so long as he stays. The only worrying thing from Connacht point of view is whenever you get players that, especially players that have come to Connacht, once they start really excelling, people start like looking for them. So you don't want to lose them to a Munster or Leinster or an Ulster or even potentially abroad if he's not in an Irish picture. But I think, given his history with the under 20s, I think he could be very much in the picture for Ireland. And hopefully he'll start to kind of take hold of a starting berth in the next while. I think some of the performances off the bench were very good. Like you said, Niall Murray, I thought, had a decent game. It was quiet from Joe Joyce. It's probably the least impactful he's been since he arrived. And I'd say that's just a flash in the pan, to be honest. You'll get him back. Jack Ainger as well, who's been going well all season. I think he looked like he was struggling a little bit as well. So there was some positive performances. I was just reading up on the stats here. Just if you want to talk about positivity, if you were to show the stats to a play to a fan and say, "Oh, what was this game like?" They would say Connacht hockey to Cardiff, and it was all Connacht, and the scoreline doesn't reflect how dominant we were. Like clean breaks of 5-2, defenders beaten 23-14, territory 60%, number of tackles we had way less, but we also had higher percentage of tackle success, turnovers the same, less penalties. It looks like a really dominant Connacht performance, which if you watch the game was not in any way the case.
Yeah, they had plenty of clean breaks, especially second half, and then it would get to that kind of 5-10 meters, and then there would either be, you know, ball lost, or Cardiff would have a pretty impressive turnover and like that. It was just that lack of sort of clinicalness. But you touched on something there, and we do have to obviously talk about it. Damer Kilgallen is leaving Connacht at the end of the season to go to Munster. We'd heard rumours for a couple of weeks. I definitely didn't want to believe it because I'm a huge Damer Kilgallen fan.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. He is dead to me. Do not know he exists. No, of course not. Initially I was very, very angry. I was very pissed off. I still am pissed off about it. Initially I was kind of asking the question why, because he's obviously played so much. But then when you do break it down, I don't think anyone's necessarily in the wrong here. I'd love to know if Connacht offered him a contract. We don't know that information. Do we know that information yet?
Everyone's aware, Connacht offered him and Munster met that offer.
They can't outbid each other, right?
No, they can't outbid each other. From what I've heard from one or two people, that they can be some sort of underhanded little whispers in the ears. They're not outbidding on paper, but there's other things that go hand in hand with a contract that aren't necessarily on paper. So I don't know if that was the case here, but you know, often situations can be bettered as opposed to just your monetary gain. But from what we know, he just chose the contract. I think Connacht said that they wanted to keep him. They tried to, but he just chose the contract.
Yeah, again, upsetting to hear that because obviously he played a lot. But then when you do break it down, Shane Bolton has emerged as a real talent. You know, you have Santi coming back hopefully sooner rather than later. You've got obviously Mac Hansen when he's fit. You still have Tiernan O'Halloran, John Porch. Andrew Smith has kind of emerged as himself as a coach's favourite. You still have Liam McNamara, who's still, we don't really know what he's like. Or McNulty is thereabouts, who occasionally plays well. So there is a lot of competition in that back three spots. I would still have Damer Kilgallen quite high in those spots, but when you do start ranking maybe the players, like obviously with Mac, is number one. I still have Porchy quite highly rated, although we haven't seen him a ton.
Wilkins has Ralston as a starter if he's fit every time as well.
Exactly. Ralston plays and can play several positions. So when you start thinking about it like that, like, does it make it any easier? No, but if he saw there was too much competition there and maybe he thought he could nail down a starting place from Munster, which obviously heightens your international aspects, I don't blame him for going. It just sucks that it's to Munster, literally go anywhere else. I'd be happier. But the fact that we've been such fans of him for the last 2 years. He's such a talent, and for him to be, you know, heading down to Munster, it does sting. But Sam, do we see him starting for Munster?
I think so. I think Munster have been kind of crying out for that sort of powerful, almost James Lowe-esque winger. I know Kilgallen's a bit more athletic in terms of his pace, but Munster look to want to play like that. Prendergast seemingly wants to play with that style of winger. I think they've been making do with Sean O'Brien on the wing. He is a centre, really, first and foremost. So they'll want to move him back to cover the centre positions. And I think, you know, you've seen Conway retire. You've seen Earls retire. You have Nash there is in the international pickup. You have Daly. You have a few good, really good players there. But I think he, you know, almost like we were saying with Sam Elo, like he's, you know, sky's the limit in terms of ceiling. Like we've seen what he can do. He's a fantastic finisher. He's athletic. He's good with his hands. All accounts, when he was in the seven set up for a little while, he's an athletic freak. We've seen some of the breakaway tries he's gotten. We've seen some of his finishing ability, and he's the size and profile that you want in a big winger. So I could see him start, and I think that they've made a move for him on purpose. They've identified that size of winger. They could have identified any number of pacey wingers in Leinster and gone for them, or even younger pacey wingers like a Jennings or a Shea Mullins, maybe from younger in ours, but they wanted a starter. They didn't go after someone who's established himself as such a clinical try scoring machine as him without wanting him to be in and around the conversation for starting wing.
Yeah, disappointing still. Westy, your thoughts on Kilgallen's exit? Are you just as upset as we are?
Yeah, it's almost the old kind of mentality of once a player starts to get any recognition, they move away from Connacht. Now, I don't necessarily think it is, but it stings a bit like that because He did. I know he's from Kildare, I think, but he did come through our academy, so it does feel like he is a product of Connacht rugby. And then to move off once he's kind of starting to see, once he's starting to see these kind of real, you know, really good end of the season last season, and been quite good end season this season. But I think we kind of asked for it by signing so many back, like speedy wingers. Like it, you can't look at our team sheet and say, oh, we've a right to hang on to every one of those players. Like somebody had to go. Do I think he's the best person to get rid of if we again? I know this isn't how it works, right? I know the RFU didn't come to Connacht and say get rid of a winger, and we got rid of Kilgannon. But I would have liked if they had done more to hold on to him. What can they do? They can't outbid people. Do you know what I mean? It's not not that difficult. But as you say, I think you said about Bolton emerging. I think it just makes it more important for us to retain Bolton now next season. Like he's out of contract, but if we've Kilgannon gone, I think we need Bolton. I think the last two games in particular, Andrew Smith's been very good. Andrew Smith was a rare ray of light in the game. In the majority of the game yesterday, he had some really good carries, some really good breaks. So that looks good. And again, it would be tough being a winger like Kilgannon and Connacht and knowing that you're always going to be behind Mac Hansen. Now, I know Mac Hansen is away, but he's that bit younger that he does play a fair bit more than, let's say, the likes of Bundy. Bundy is that bit older. You know, Finlay is a front row. That's a bit more of a you know, taxing position, a bit more wear and tear, no matter what you're doing. You know, if you're looking at a long few years behind Mac Hansen, you can't blame someone for wanting to move on and get first team rugby. As you said, Nash now playing for Ireland, playing very well. I think Nash is a great player. I think Daly is a huge has huge potential. I think there's a few other young lads coming through, but I think if you're Jim Kilgallen, you're going there with the eye of I'm going to start. You know, I'm not saying that he's the best player by a man's by a mile, written, but in his mind, he's going there to become a starting player, week in, week out. So, yeah, I'm really disappointed about it. It stings a little, but I do hope he succeeds. I'd hate to see him cry off and you know disappear off into the ether kind of thing. I'd like to see him do well. I think he's a good enough talent that I'd like to see that talent prosper wherever he goes.
In France.
I hope he,
Yeah, preferably in France.
I hope he does really well personally. I hope it does not translate to team success. Does that make
Yeah.
sense? Is
Yeah.
that fair enough to say? Yeah, we'll wrap it up there on Connacht. Yeah, look, if we see another performance like that in 2 weeks' time, then I think we can start to put up a bit more red flags, but we'll give the benefit of the doubt for the time being.
Before we move on from the Connacht match, just shout out to Thomas Young for Cardiff, because I thought he was phenomenal. I thought he was, like, for big portions of that game, even though Cardiff looked like they were better than us, I don't think that they were. We defended pretty easy, like pretty helpfully. I was impressed with our defense, but I thought he was head and shoulders above everyone else on the pitch, and should be definitely in and around that Welsh squad going forward because he looked class.
Yeah, definitely a couple of big turnovers. Moving on to another Irish province that did not perform well. The only team that lost at the weekend, Ulster, unfortunately, away to Ospreys, lost last second drop goal, which we will get to. But the Ulster sort of misery season continues. They now sit currently in eighth spot. 6 wins from 10. They're normally always in around the second and third place spot, which they might get back to, but a poor performance away to Ospreys. Just a team that seem similar, just cannot get kind of out of their own way at times, seem to really struggling to get into gear. Big names not performing. Stockdale again, you know, I feel like we should be owed apologies from all the Stockdale lovers who keep telling us they should be in Irish squads. And it's nothing against him. There's just no trust there at the moment. I just wouldn't trust him in a big game, especially compared to other players. But a bad day for Ulster on the pitch, and then obviously Dan McFarlane's comments after the game, criticizing referees, and the two decisions. Kind of, I wouldn't say shifting the blame to the refs, but that's what it definitely came across as, rather than either himself, coaching staff, or players. Just all kind of heaps up on the pressure on him and Ulster Rugby, and obviously everyone involved there. Westy, it's just not a good time again for Ulster fans, Ulster players. I mean, I feel like we keep having this conversation every time they have a loss, but it's not been a good season so far. I think that's fair to say. Do you see it continuing that way, or do you see some hope at the end of the tunnel here?
It's tough, right? Because And look, I give them the same benefit that I give Connacht, and as Sam said, you know, it's been a grueling start to the tournament. You know, 18 weeks in a row. Was it 18? No, it wasn't 18 weeks in a row.
13.
13 weeks in a row. 13 weeks in a row. Then having 2 or 3 weeks off and having to come back out and having to travel away again makes it a little bit more difficult. This kind of sad fact for Ulster is, I mean, they maybe had two players unavailable. Now again, we're in the same boat. We didn't have a load of players unavailable either, but having so many of their kind of first team players, or arguably first team players, let's say, available for selection, would make that result even more disappointing. I think the main thing, well, not the main thing, but one of the things that sticks out for me is, like, this isn't the first end of the game where McFarland's given out about the referees. And I know, like, I'm not saying referees are petty or, you know, they'll get you, but that can't help but embed psychologically in the mind of a referee, been like, these guys are always giving out about the referees. It's not going to help them when push comes to shove. It's a difficult situation because 2 years ago they were fighting for that top spot with Leinster, and there hasn't been massive changes to their squad, but they seem to have to now have really stalled. I mean, I was kind of optimistic at the start of the season about where they could go with the mix of young talent they were bringing in. But yeah, that result is very disappointing. I know I've said it already, but, like, I really hope no more than it is for us that that result is a kick in the pants for them to get going. What's really worrying for me from an Ulster perspective, and look, it could be the making of them, but they still have to go to South Africa. They have two, I think they have two pretty tough fixtures in South Africa, as far as I can
Wanderers and
remember.
Sharks.
Yeah, and Sharks won for the first time ever recently. Yeah, it the Sharks are a really good team. They've had a lot of really good players. They just aren't playing well. So, you got to wonder. Look, if they went to South Africa and got a win over the Sharks, that could be the making of the season. That could really bring them back with the kind of with the wind behind them. But what I mean to say is that they have quite a difficult run of fixtures left as well in the season. So, I think it's make or break time for them now. And more than it is for us, the next couple of fixtures are going to be really, really telling for them. And yeah, like, I know we have to get ahead of somebody, really, or two or three teams now to get back in the top eight. But you kind of feel for Ulster. And look, it's not to pile it on Dan McFarlane, but there's been a bit of dissatisfaction with him for the last, we've been here for at least 2 years now. So you wonder what his position will be at the end of the season if they miss out on a top eight, or if they go out in another, even if they go out in another quarter final, they got Ulster fans wouldn't be happy with that.
Yeah, it seems they're in that. Was it 2 years ago? When did they lose to Toulouse in the quarterfinal of the Champions Cup? Was it 2021 or was it 2020? I can't remember what that year seemed to be the year. That was the year. That was their window. Because they also lost the semi final of the URC that year. I remember to the last kick down in South Africa as well. And it was like two real games they probably should have killed off, and then they would have been in a final and then potentially a semi-final, final of Champions Cup. And since then it's just been a sort of a steady decline. And Ulster fans, you can see online, you can see sort of in the responses to some of their tweets, are not pleased with how the club's being ran, and the coaching. Dan McFarland, obviously, yeah, some would say maybe I can't see him staying past this season. I don't see why he even particularly want to. It just seems like, you know, not in a bad way, but managers' times with clubs will come to an end, you know, kind of organically at some stage. How long has he been with Ulster? 4 or 5 years?
In 2017, I think, is it?
2017. Oh wow,
Like
yeah. So
five, 6 years.
it's not
Maybe I'm
like they
wrong on that. I'll
haven't.
check it. But
Yeah, it's not like they haven't given it a go, though. You know what I mean? I think it might be coming stale. I do want to say one thing though. Like, I feel like sometimes the rugby community, especially on Twitter, can be so a little bit holier than now. Like, I'm not saying you should criticize referees, but also they're not above criticism. Now it doesn't look good that it's as soon after the game, but, like, you know, it seems to be the attitude is just like you can't criticize referees, like, no matter what, even if they're not particular, even if they're not correct, or they did make a mistake. We're very open to criticize players, and again, once it doesn't cross that personal line, that's where I would draw the line. But I just get the sense online that we are a bit like, oh, you can't do that, and it's like, well, that's not, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, but maybe I'm not as nice a person as other people. But I just thought the initial reaction wasn't whether the refs were right or not in their decisions. It was Dan McFarland is, you know, shouldn't be criticizing the refs. And I agree, straight after the game, probably not a good look. But, like, was he right? Did anyone ask that question?
But he wasn't. That was the problem. Like, they were playing against 13 men at one point. You know, that's what I had taken it as to be the criticism of him doing it. I don't think that it was the question of referees' decisions, which I don't like in a press conference at all. I'd be fairly in agreement with you. I do think that they're not above criticism, but their job, we've spoken about it a couple of times the last couple of weeks, they're so unbelievably difficult that I think that they're trying and they're doing it. And there are some decisions that can be criticised or questioned, but there is a process that you can go through to appeal to refs as a coach. McFarland, it's what my understanding of people's dissatisfaction with what McFarland did was, because this isn't the first time this season he's criticised a ref or tried to lay blame on the ref or even on the training or even on the players. I think he's just at the moment making excuses in these post-match press conferences, and it'd be as well to just send an assistant coach in his place if he's going to be acting like that, because I don't think he's doing himself any favours. And that was what came across to me as what people had issue with, as opposed to his criticising of the refs. He was in the wrong in terms of his criticising of the refs, in my opinion, and that's, I don't think that, I think that was secondary to what people were actually saying, is stop blaming other people, because by all accounts, the atmosphere there is not good. An attitude reflects leadership, as we know from the hit movie, Remember the Titans. So he needs to do something. I don't get or understand the people saying, like, he should do the dignified thing and walk away. It's like, pay him the money. Like, he has a contract. Honor contracts. Contracts are there to be honored. Like, you can't talk about players' loyalties, like Dean Rucagall and leaving Connacht and all, where's the loyalty, if you're not going to talk about the club's loyalty to the people that they have signed contracts for. So if they're going to want him to walk, pay him to walk, if that's the case. Don't let him just, don't assume he's going to walk off and not get the money he's owed, because that's not how the world works.
No, and look, in professional sports, loyalty does not get rewarded necessarily. So I'm not saying loyalty doesn't exist. It does in certain aspects, but you can't, in any professional sport, you can't expect loyalty, I think. That's probably fair to say. Because again, if the club wants to get rid of you, they get rid of you. So it's not like a... Yeah, I think McFarland, I think... Yeah, I agree with you. It's sort of shifting the blame elsewhere. And it seems to be the case with Ulster Rugby at the moment. I think they'll move on at the end of the season. I think that's probably the best thing to do. But, like, who knows? I can see them also finishing top four. I can see them not making the top eight. They're very talented. But as you said, Westy, it's not like they're an easy run of fixtures to come in the next kind of couple of weeks. And that's difficult. It can easily go spiraling downwards. Especially with now the depth of talent in the URC, I think there's no easy games anymore, which is great in one sense, but tough for Ulster.
I think a lot of this, because people will probably try and say to myself in particular, because of how positive about Connacht I am, but us as a podcast and us as a Connacht fan base, about, oh, well, you're hypercritical of Ulster and they're ahead of you. I think Ulster are in a completely different situation in terms of how long they've had McFarland, the age demographic of the players they have coming through playing under McFarland. They should be at the end or coming towards the culmination of a long-term plan, whereas Connacht are very much at the start of a long-term plan with Pete Wilkins. We've heard that there's going to be some pretty big and significant changes over the summer in terms of personnel that are there. And with Ulster, I think the recruitment has been poor with Ulster. I think losing Dwayne Vermeulen has stood to them massively, because even regardless of how often he played or how not the same Dwayne Vermeulen he was for Ulster as he was for South Africa, it's a noticeable loss there. He brings something to that club, and they seem to be at the end of their tether. So I think this is probably just the natural end for McFarland, because it hasn't, the 7-year plan or the 6-year plan hasn't culminated in something, and it really should have with the players they have and the squad they've had and how harmoniously together it's been for the whole, on the whole, really, for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and to people saying that we're not being fair, when Connacht signed a double World Cup winning prop who's 32 years old, come back to me. You know what I mean? Let's then talk about maybe even playing fields. You know what I mean? Let's have that conversation.
You want to talk about plastic playing fields? You want to talk about the plastic playing fields?
Yeah, I still look. That's more of a fan issue than I don't think is necessary. But look at, and I have no beef with Ulster, no beef at all. But if fans want to come at us, let them come at us. We'll move on to Munster. They were away at away to Scarlets on Friday evening. They come out on top 42-7, but this game was much, much tighter for that for a long time. It was, 14-7, I think, with about 60 minutes gone, and then Munster ran in 4 tries over the space of the next 18-20 minutes. So they blew the game wide open. But Westy, how would you rate that Munster performance on Friday night?
It's tough to, you know, It's tough to overly criticize it because of the, you look at the winning margin and you think, oh Jesus, we would bite a hand off to have gotten that. What I would say is, nobody's going to argue too heavily. The first hour was poor. It took them a long time to get going. It was when they got that try, just after the hour mark, that the floodgates kind of started to open. And it did feel like that was coming. It felt like there was, if Munster broke a barrier, that it was going to, be a long evening for Scarlets. I think, look, again, we keep saying it for everyone else, that it has the same rules have to apply. Like, it's a very, these are kind of very difficult fixtures to perform at and to get up for. And what matters for Munster is the result and the bonus point result as well over a struggling side. They were able to go, and although it took them a while, they were able to build and impose their game plan on Scarlets. It was, great to see Carberry playing, I think, pretty much the whole game. I know he's not going to be there kind of for a lot longer, but I still want to see him do well. I think everybody was on tenterhooks this every time RG Snyman sneezed. They're afraid he would break something and be out for another long time, but great to see him play. Yeah, I think what you worry about maybe a bit is, Ulster getting off or Munster getting off to quite a good start. And then even the try that Scarlett scored was quite poor defending. So I kind of thought, like, oh, this could be a real spark behind them, but it wasn't in the end. I think with Munster, you'll be happy with how your bench did. You'll be happy with the guys who came on. I know it was kind of a run in, but I thought Shane McCarthy's try at the end was really strong. It was really good setup as well. You've Mike Haley back. You've quite a lot of guys coming back in from us. Quite a lot of guys who were injured. Ahern had that horrible head injury about a month ago. It's great to see him back on form. And yeah, a couple of guys who were with the Ireland camp were released. So I think any false start of it, it took some time to get into it. I think that's kind of explainable in the nature of the players they have coming back into rotation and back from fitness. So, if I was them, I'd forget about the first hour of the game and be happy that we won it. Do your analysis now for the next 2 weeks and get ready for your next fixture. Because again, they also have to go to South Africa. So that could be another difficult trip for them, especially when they're managing players coming back from injury. They will also, it'll be interesting to see when players are released back from the Six Nations. So, I would analyze it, of course, and look at the first hour of the game, but I wouldn't beat myself up over it. They got to where they needed to go. They got their 5 points, and they have another 2 weeks now to work on everything before the next game.
Yeah, Tom Ahern called up to their squad,
Yeah, and
which
Ollie
is,
Yeager
I
as well,
think,
brought in.
Ollie Yeager, yeah.
Tom
So.
Ahern, it was stated that he was there for training. Yeager was included, and Tom Ahern was to train with the team. So I think it's being
Maybe
implied
it's
that he's
still
not
nursing
in.
back, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say one thing that pissed me off was I saw a lot of tweets of when Ollie Yeager was announced to the squad saying well deserved. I'm not disagreeing that maybe he should be in the squad. I wouldn't say it's well deserved. He's played a handful of times for Munster. I'm just arguing with the point of it's well deserved, that's all. I don't know if that's the word I would have used, but a positive for Munster, obviously, they had their woes a couple of weeks and months ago of not scoring in the second half. They put up 30 points in this second half, so that's one thing you can take from that game of, hey, we're improving on this side of things, and look, they still won by 30, what, 7 points, 36 points. Still very, very impressive. Sam, your thoughts on this?
I thought they were, when they scored the two early tries, it was going to be a whitewash, and then Scarlett scored, and I went, okay, there's a bit of a game here, and then there was a bit of a nothingness for a while, and then the floodgates kind of opened around the 60th minute. I thought Carberry was quite good. I was impressed with Carberry. I don't know that there's too much more than what Westy said. They didn't have to really get out of second gear at any point. They looked shaky enough, but Scarlets didn't really look like they were up to much at all. Scarlets have sacked one of their coaches and reshuffled all of their coaches in the last few hours, so they're making significant changes off the back of a poor run of fixtures, seemingly poor kind of background there. Hopefully they don't get that new manager bounce or that new coach bounce against us in 2 weeks' time, but or 3 weeks' time. I think that Munster will just, like we said with Connacht, these one-off games, or just win them at whatever cost. You don't have all your squad for the entire training period. You're kind of trying to get back up mental sharpness, mental fitness. They managed to grow into the game, and when the opportunity was there, they did something that Connacht don't do very often, and I'd love if they did, is put the foot in the throat and score the 40-odd points. When they scored that try in the 62nd minute. They could have shut up shop and gone, oh, that's us, or just gone for the bonus point, but they didn't. They want to be relentless, and they kept scoring up until like the 76th or 77th minute. So there, you know, there's a lot there to be jealous of from a Connacht point of view. They managed to get through an early kind of meh sort of game and build up into it and take advantage and really capitalize at a poor team. So they'll take a good bit from that. But Wesley said, like, I was looking at their fixtures, they have some tough fixtures. They're away two games in South Africa, and then their last three games are home to Connacht, away to Edinburgh, home to Ulster. And, you know, those three could be must wins by the point of that, because ourselves, Munster, Ulster, Benetton might get dragged down into the fight. Lions might pull themselves up into the fight. I think Ospreys are sitting in there. There's a good fight for that sixth, seventh, eighth kind of spot there. No one is safe. I think it's 4 points really between fourth and 10th or 11th. So
sounds very threatening, Sam. No one is safe.
No one's safe.
Except Lance. Yeah, I think.
Except Lance. They do what they want.
I think it's easy to maybe look at the table like Munster 9th, Connacht 10th, Ulster 8th, and panic, but it's literally what Connacht are on 28 points and Benetton on in 4th are 4 points ahead in 32. So it's literally one win in the difference. Connacht have 6 wins from 10. Which is, I think, like, I would say on pace for what we would have expected, I think.
Yeah.
And with a run of the next two games, I think they should be looking to win both those games, Scarlets and Lions at home. And then after that, they get a bit tougher, obviously, but I think that's definitely doable. All right, last province in action was Leinster. Sam, I'm going to call to you here. I didn't get to see this game. I checked my WhatsApp during the game and I saw a gif of a bubble being burst. So why did a few hours later I check the score and see Leinster 47, Benetton 18? Please explain yourself.
It was a fantastic 5 minutes when the bubble had been burst, or 2 minutes. But Benetton scored really easy very early on, and I went, ooh, all of Leinster are away with Ireland, so this could be the time when someone takes advantage of it. Benetton are going well, you know. They're riding that upward kind of, it was first versus second at the time. Now I think it's first and fourth, so that shows you the difference. But about 4 or 5 minutes later, I think Scott Penny scored, and that was the end of my bubble bursting. There's a lot of really impressive things in the Benetton performance. Umaga scoring and kicking really well. His hands weren't great. I prefer him at 10 than 15. He had a couple of kind of shaky ones under the high ball, but he was extremely good there. And then for Leinster, Scott Penny was captained and captained very well and did what Scott Penny does and scored, I think, 2 tries he scored in the end. They had a debut at fullback, remind me of his name, McGurline, I think, who shaky to begin with, but grew into it. And then a player that I said last year I'd love if Connacht tried to make a little sneaky go for, but he's becoming too integral to their wider squad, is that Liam Turner at 13, who is just a pace machine. And from a Leinster fan's point of view, Ross Byrne and Jamie Osborne both playing and being back. And Osborne, he looks every bit a really, really top-class international player. Like, he looks like he's going to grow into something very special, because his decision-making, when to kick, when to go, has the pace to run against people, has a big boot. I think he's a quality player, and you saw what, you know, they miss him if he's out injured, and Ireland will be looking to call him up very quickly again, I'd say. All in all, one of those kind of boring Leinster performances by the end of it, but for a while it was quite tight. I think it was kind of the same as the Munster game, maybe a little bit more Leinster. It got up, yeah, there was it 35 odd minutes, it was still kind of halftime, it was still in the balance, and then Leinster just opened up in the second half, capitalized, did what Leinster do, did what I'd love to see Connacht do once or twice, and just, you know, take the game by scruff of the neck, put the foot in the throat and win it. So all in all, born Leinster again, walking their way to a loss in the semi-final, as per usual.
We're so bitter. Westy, how great was it to see future Connacht players Will Connors and Max Deegan start in the back row?
Yeah, they can only say no so many times.
No one says no to us 7 times in a row. Nobody.
This is an interesting time. Look, I say it now, I don't say it when we lose them in the sports ground, but it's an interesting time to watch Leinster, because it is interesting to see who are the next people who are going to prevent Connacht players from getting into the Ireland squad. I agree with Sam said. I think up until maybe the hour mark, the game was in the balance, and there was 10 or 13 points in it. I think Benetton still had a chance to play some good rugby, and it really highlights why you should never really watch rugby on RT, because Hugh Cahill would have you believe that Benetton had World Cup winning players in that squad, and they are also, in fact, I can confirm, are missing players for the Six Nations too. So it's just worth that being said at some point, because you'd be lost for how many times he mentions the conveyor belt and the endless talent and how much he is a five-star guy.
Should we invite him on the pod just for the crack? Like, just see if he'll come on, just so we can like ask him, like, what's your story, man? Like, why do you hate rugby outside of Ireland and Leinster? Just because
And
it's
even
obvious.
complaining about how boring the game was when it's still in the balance. It's like, no, it's not really. Like, I would be of the mindset that as a commentator, it's your job to provide information and keep the game interesting, not point out when people should turn off their TVs. But that's my it's one man's opinion.
Who does the BBC coverage of Six Nations? I can't think of who they are, but they were commentating on the it was England Wales game, which was a poor game. But the way, they were still critical of the game, but it wasn't like, oh my God, why are any of us watching this game? Like that vibe that Hugh Cahill gives you. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of like, you're sitting there excited for a game, and he's basically berating you for wasting your time for tuning in. Where you're like, you're supposed to be selling this product. We're trying to get it to more viewers here,
Well,
Hugh.
the
You seem to don't get that part.
BBC have the likes of like Jonathan Davies and like Nigel Owens, who like love the sport and will talk about it. Like, and even they have, I can't remember the Scottish commentator's name, is it something Cotter, like fantastic like describer of the game and few tidbits of information and stuff. It's a difference when you get people who are actually interested. And actually, Joe, what I will say, and someone said to me during the week, and I have to agree with them, Gerry Flannery was very good on comms during the week, pointing out why kicking isn't actually boring, why it's actually quite important for players for teams to do.
That's been
I think
my
it.
thing for the last 2 or 3 years, is I'm pissed off with ex players being pundits. Coaches of any sort, even if they're ex players that are now coaches, make so much better pundits because they're not just able to analyze the game properly and remove themselves from what the nickname of the lad they sat beside in the changing room was, but they're also able to explain it because their job is literally to explain the game to people. So they make so much better thing. I know Hugh Cahill's not an ex player, or maybe he was a Thurles player at some point, but people like Flannery, I've so much time for any coach that's on. Even Ron Nogara, who is just such good listen. He's not the most enthusiastic in terms of his delivery, but you hang off every word because it's right, and he's got a way of delivering it, and it's accessible, and that's what makes a really, really good pundit. So they should only fish in the coach as well. They should go nowhere near the jobs for the lads kind of well that they've been just clinging on to for the last while.
Or someone who knows nothing about rugby and just for the crack, like just to see that context, be like, oh, geez, I didn't know they could do that. God, that's aggressive or
I prefer
something.
that.
Yeah,
I prefer someone who's
100%.
never watched, like, oh my God, what's
Yeah, he
happening?
can't. That can't be legal. Surely not. All right, we'll wrap it up there, lads. We'll be back next week. Six Nations is back this weekend. Ireland play Wales Saturday. Scotland, England then after that at the quarter five slot. And then Sunday, France and Italy play in France as well. So we'll be back to cover all the Six Nations action next week. Boys, appreciate it as always. And we will catch you next week.
Night night.